Welcome back to the Compass live stream, the only and therefore the best live stream dedicated to proof of work mining. Always glad to have my co-host Will on the show with me. Will, thanks for joining me again for another week of live streams. I'm particularly excited about this one. We have a lot of questions that our miners ask us all the time. We have two great guests to help us dig through some of the answers here. So thanks for coming on the show, Will.
Yeah, really excited for this one. We've had a lot of people in our mining network just be asking about crypto taxes and Bitcoin taxes in particular. And I think this stream should really illuminate a lot of those questions.
So I'll let the guests introduce themselves. Roger, we had on a previous stream, though, talking about some worries, concerns, and that sort of stuff with the infrastructure bill. He's actually the first guest to have a double appearance on our stream. So Roger, we're super glad to have you back talking with us. Sheehan, we met through interacting with some jokes and shit posts on Twitter. Also super glad to have you here with us. Just to start us off, do you mind telling us a little bit about each of yourselves, your background, what you're working on now, and sort of a little bit about how you got into the crypto and tax area of things. Sheehan, start with you, and then I'll hand it to you, Roger.
Yeah, sure. So thanks for having me, guys. My name is Sheehan, or CPA, head of tax strategy at Cointracker. Some of you guys might have heard of the company. It's a tax software tool which helps you calculate your crypto taxes, including mining taxes, which we'll be talking about today. I've always been an accountant, close to a decade now, got into crypto around 2017, 2018 timeline. And since then, I've only focused on cryptocurrency taxes.
Awesome. Roger, great to have you back. Our audience and I personally loved our previous conversation. We touched on taxes in that one too. Do you mind giving us just a quick recap on yourself and your background?
Happy to. So I've been an international tax lawyer. I've been one for about 30 years now. I should be more gray and fatter than I am. I'm not sure how I'm not. About a decade at the IRS, about a decade as a partner at Ernst & Young and various other places. I love talking crypto, got into it around 2016. Always to the intersection of tax and something else when that something else became really sexy and fun, crypto. It was like writing a law school exam every day, given what crypto is and what it represents. So happy to go through this stuff and chat with Sheehan, who I always enjoyed chatting with.
I think so. Most of our audience is probably familiar with the basics. Some of them may not at all for newer miners joining the Compass clientele. Could you just walk us through at a high level, like what are the basics in terms of filings and types of taxes that miners are looking at? Like when you buy an ASIC, you start mining, you receive payouts, like what type of taxes apply to you basically once you join the mining game? Roger, if you don't mind kicking us off, and then Sheehan, if you have anything to add also.
Yeah, happy to. The notion of what is income is a very broad in the Internal Revenue Code. And it's basically an accession to wealth. And if you're getting paid to do something, you're going to have income. And there are no specific rules in the tax code around crypto. The tax code has no reference to crypto in any shape or form. And you basically have to think, how do you apply existing principles to the tax law involving crypto? So that said, if you are buying an ASIC and you're doing an economic activity and you're getting a reward, you have income, point one. Point two, there's issues around timing and debates. The IRS's view that if you, at the time you get the reward, that's your income event. Measure the fair market value at the time of the, you have unrestricted access to the reward. That's the second point. The third point is ordinary income. Because you didn't sell or exchange property for the property asset. So you have ordinary income. If you hold the asset, and that establishes your tax basis at that time. If you later sell the asset, and assuming you're not a quote dealer, and for this purpose we're not, so assuming that you're just a miner, you then have a capital gain or capital loss, depending on the price movement from the time you receive the reward and from the time you sell the reward. Next point, call it fourth or fifth, you have issues around employment taxes, self-employment taxes. the IRS has said that if you are a miner, you will have self-employment taxes. I think that's an overbroad statement in how you mine, quite frankly. If you are directly mining yourself, and it's rises to the level of what the tax law thinks is a trade or business, then you will have self-employment taxes. If it's a hobby that you're doing it every now and then, it's not a for-profit venture with the IRS thinks, then I don't think you have self-employment. You don't have a trade or business. Next point on this trade or business point is that if you are, you know, mining with a centralized company where they're doing all the activities and you're just getting a reward, that kind of activity is sufficiently passive, in my opinion, that it wouldn't rise to the level of a trader business. And there's analogs in other areas. In real estate, for example, there's a notion of what they call a triple net lease, where I may own real estate, but someone else is doing all the profit engaging activities. And all I'm doing is giving them money and getting back coupons. And at that point, that kind of thing, I don't think is a trader business. By reference to other areas of tax law. And then you can take the view that I do have income. I do have ordinary income. But I'm not subject to self-employment taxes, there. So I'll say that out there and maybe Sheehan could pick up anything I didn't touch on. Sheehan?
No, I think Roger gave a great explanation. I think the summary here is that there's no simple answer based on how you interact with your mining operation and to what extent your same income stream could be classified in different ways under the IRS rules. So as it could be capital gain or self-employment income. In some cases, it could even be passive income. So so there's no clear answer. It all depends on the facts and circumstances of your unique case.
Roger, I want to go back to a point really quickly that you made opening up your statement there. And this is somewhat diverting us from the point of Zach's initial question. But when we're talking about how the IRS crafts tax law, you said, like, obviously there's no mention of crypto in those tax codes at all. But I think a lot of people out there are thinking, like, why has IRS not talked about this specific industry or laid out guidance? When you're talking about general guidance for crypto, maybe you can just kind of give us a lay of the land of how the IRS thinks of specific industries and how they kind of put out guidance just in a broad sense.
Happy to. So I want to say a couple of things. When you look to how tax law exists, you begin with the Constitution that authorizes an income tax. You then go to the tax code enacted by Congress, where there is no reference to crypto, and you have to think, what is crypto amongst the different classes of property referenced in the tax code? And the tax code does reference debt, commodities, stock, intangibles, and you have to draw upon any number of these things to determine how some operative code sections could apply. You then go to cases that are interpreting a statute or regulation. You then go to regulations, some of which have the force of law because they're legislative regulations. Others have interpretive that have less weight, but in effect have more weight than informal guidance. The IRS has published a number of informal guidance items, whether they be private letter rulings where Sheehan says, hey, IRS, what do you think of this? And the IRS writes back to Sheehan and says, this is the answer. And now Sheehan can rely on that and take a position on that. And there's other kinds of interaction like that, including non-public. Those are published and other things that are not published. And then you have general statements that are, which it does exist on crypto, where it's frequently asked questions, revenue rulings, which are not authoritative. They're just IRS's expression of a view. There's different views of whether IRS can litigate against the prior revenue ruling or not. So you have all those things around there. The IRS has, in informal guidance, taken views on certain crypto transactions, but they're overbroad in many ways. And it's understandable because, and again, this is my perspective from having worked there for more than a decade. It's actually approximately a decade. It's because they try to understand something first and then figure out how to apply the law to those facts. They have, although crypto is really important to us, they've got to really address the entire economy. And as a result of that, you think, you know, e-commerce, you know, there's only portions of, you know, guidance around transactions involving, SaaS transactions or e-commerce transactions, that ecosystem existed really for more than a decade before the IRS came out with its definitive guidance. They try to figure it out. And as a result of that, you know, their doors are always open. I have people that I know I call there and say, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? And they'll give you informal feedback. But in effect, they're trying to figure it out because they don't want to basically put out a guidepost and kill the industry or kill a transaction or put out a guidepost and basically create a big, you know, hole that people drive trucks through and they can, you know, do economic activities without earning income. So they're trying to get it right. And that takes some time. And as anybody here that has spoken to people about crypto, it takes time to understand it. So then you think a discipline like tax and have to apply to it, it takes some time. So I just say that because, in any new area, including derivatives, as they became a more commonly accepted thing in the 90s and 2000s when I was at the government, it took a long time. There was trillions of dollars of economic activity that came up, and there was no definitive guidance. Securities lending transactions now, there's no definitive guidance on the treatment of those, or borrow fees, or rebate fees. And trillions of dollars in transactions happen that way. So it's common that this kind of thing happens. I think that most people would be thankful for the way the IRS has approached this area. It's hard to go now with a week or two that goes by where the CFTC or the SEC is not pursuing a new exchange. Obviously, Coinbase is the latest that we saw in today's. How many articles have people read about where the IRS is going after an exchange? I haven't read any. So I think, quite frankly, that's testimony to the IRS being, I would say, lenient compared to some other regulators. Yes, they're going after people with regard to income tax, and they're getting information from exchanges with John Doe summonses publicly, Kraken and Coinbase, I think one more. Circle, I believe. But that's just getting information on ultimate taxpayers. That's not going after the exchanges. So again, sorry for going on.
No, that was super helpful. And I want to sort of pick out a piece of that and give it to both of you, Roger and Sheehan. I think, you know, there's lots of very polarizing opinions on regulators and agencies and stuff across our industry. But I think, you know, most reasonable people can appreciate the process that regulators and anyone goes through in sort of understanding this industry. But, you know, there are part of that process we've seen, you know, in the past with traders and people who use exchanges that are trying to file properly and all of this, and they've been given the wrong form by exchanges for years in a row. And then there are huge gaps and the IRS comes calling. I have multiple friends who have had this experience through not necessarily any fault of their own. They just filed the wrong forms that have made maybe simple mistakes. Is there anything comparable that you've seen with minors where maybe there are very simple mistakes to avoid in filing, where you're trying to prepare everything and file properly, but you know, one or two things get missed or mislabeled or improper forms get thrown in or omitted, and then a minor sort of ends up in hot water when they didn't intend to be at all, sort of along the lines of the IRS sort of figuring out the best way and easiest way to give guidance for taxes on different things. Are there any easy steps that minors can slip up with as they file their taxes each year? Or is it, I know, Sheehan, you said, you know, there's no real simple solution here to explain mining taxes. It depends heavily case by case, but are there any simple things that miners can keep note of to avoid each year? Roger, I guess I'll hand it back to you, and then Sheehan also.
Sheehan, you go first. I had the mic last time, so.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, you go first. I'll keep it.
So for the most part, the mining taxes work like this. You know, obviously you have income recognition events. So as Roger mentioned, every time you receive those, you know, either drops of Bitcoin or whatever the cryptocurrency that you're mining for, you got to convert those into the market value at the time of the receipt and kind of sum it up on an annual basis. And that's considered your income. And most people, in my opinion, are considered, you know, hobbyist miners, meaning like they're not mining as a trade or business, meaning they have another full-time job. They're just doing it on the side. In those cases, you've got to report the income, and you don't get any business-related expense deduction to kind of offset your income because you're not running a trade or business. It's just a hobby. Now, the second category of miners are, these are professional miners. So you recognize your income. And for those people, because they're mining as a trade or business, you can deduct business-related expenses like internet fees, you know, utilities. If you're renting like a warehouse, you know, that rent, the mining equipment, and et cetera, and you pay taxes on the net amount, meaning you have your income minus the business expenses, and then you pay taxes on the net amount. So in a nutshell, that's how mining works. And the other misconception that a lot of people have is that, hey, I received these mining rewards, but I never received any cash. So therefore, I don't have to pay any taxes because I never realized any cash. But that's not the case. As soon as those mining rewards hit your wallet, you got to pay taxes. On the same point, you got to make sure that you allocate enough money to pay related taxes on that income. Because at the end of the year, what if those mine tokens, you know, go down in value? In that case, you won't have enough cash to pay the actual taxes with. So several things to consider. So just to summarize, if you're a hobbyist miner, you just had to pick up income. You don't get any business expense deduction. If you're a professional miner, you pay taxes on the net income, meaning income minus business deductions.
Yeah, I agree with the summary. I think you should also think about self-employment taxes. So if you're in a trader business, you'll have quarterly estimates that you'll have to do. I looked at 2 points, self-employment taxes, which can be 15%. Subject to a cap, plus a estimated tax that you'll file quarterly. So that you also want to be thinking about that. You know, I know that there are, and I had a pleasure to chat with Will earlier. And when you think about the model, you have to ask yourself, and this is an area that's to being, you know, quite frankly, being developed. Because if you're mining through a provider and you're getting access to mining sites in other jurisdictions, say Kazakhstan or Russia, you literally have to ask yourself, what's the tax consequence of me having a rig in a foreign country? Because if I have a rig in a foreign country and I'm just doing this directly, I could be creating taxable nexus for myself in that country. And right now, tax authorities recognize the issue. They do, in some instances, treat a computer as a business place. And probably a mining rig is a business place for crypto mining activities. So you've got to ask yourself now, do I have that kind of additional tax issue in a foreign country? And we talked about issue to take on. That could be an instance where if you're becoming a more serious miner, and I agree with the way Sheehan was dividing hobbyists versus people really in a business. And if you're rising in a business and getting exposure to a foreign country, strongly recommend using an LLC. Take your LLC and treat it as a flow through from a US tax perspective. A lot of foreign countries treat LLCs as corporations. So they're going to tax the corporate, the LLC. So you get your K-2, that's actually the way the rules typically work, can work for or against you. So that if you do create a taxable presence in a foreign country under the foreign country's views, then you won't have a taxable nexus. And if you're doing that, I also would advise working with one of the accounting firms or law firms in a foreign country just to think what it is that the foreign tax treatment of your activities are. Because if you get it wrong from a U.S. perspective or a foreign tax perspective, you can create underpayment penalties and interest that can be substantial to make your mining activity uneconomic. And we all know that the blockchain is permanent, immutable, and visible. And we also know that many tax authorities are using blockchain data attribution companies, and they get a wallet address, they can associate it with mining activities. So now in 10 years or 5 years, if they see you didn't file a tax return, depending on the country statute of limitations, they can always come back and say, oh, Mr. Sheehan, oh, Mr. Foxley, you didn't file a tax return. You were mining here in our jurisdiction. Please, this is the amount you owe. So you want to do that kind of diligence. And I think what we're seeing now in this environment is that across the board, you know, there's a bit of the Wild West in 2017 with lots of economic activity involving crypto. And then the regulators catch up a couple years later with bad consequences to some. And I think from a tax perspective, we're going to see that also. And we're going to see that on a global scale, where globally, many tax authorities are engaging with taxpayers to say, this is your activity. And they go after the bigger fish rather before they go after the smaller.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. There's definitely a lot of complexity there to unpack. What you both were just sort of touching on ties directly into an audience question that we had from several different miners. Because, you know, there's a few different parts to sort of the string of mining, right? You have where the company or the hosting provider is domiciled, and you have maybe the farm they've contracted with where the machines are operating. And then you also have the pool that actually pays the coins to the miner. And all three of those could be in separate jurisdictions. And so the question is basically, does the location of the mining pool, the machines, the hosting facility, and the provider all impact which taxes are paid? And Roger, it kind of seems like you said that's kind of a little bit of an open question right now. You definitely need to do diligence to try and find as best of an answer as you can with a tax professional. But anything else to add there from both of you in terms of all those different components that go into actually mining, and all of them could be, you know, scattered all across the map, and the effects of that basically. Shehan, I'll hand it to you.
Yeah, so the sourcing issue is important. Like you said, you know, your mining machines and operations could be, operated out of a different country. And at the end of the day, US has this, you know, worldwide tax system. So you got to pay taxes on your worldwide income. Now, that said, I wouldn't worry about, you know, sourcing rules or, you know, filing taxes in other countries and et cetera. If you're just a small scale miner, you know, who receive like, let's say $1,000-$2,000 a month or something like that, of finding income. Because at that point, you know, it's not worth kind of, you know, researching about those things and kind of going to a bigger accounting firms. Now, on the other hand, if you have like a large scale mining operation that makes like millions of dollars and you have these servers and et cetera distributed across the world, that's the time you should go talk to like a good mid-size or like a bigger accounting firm and get that consultation on, okay, which jurisdiction do I have nexus on, whether I should file my taxes on those jurisdictions, what type of additional forms I should be filing in my US taxes, and et cetera. So something to keep in mind.
Gotcha. Yeah. That makes sense. Sorry. Go ahead, Roger.
If I were small, I would just use U.S. Mining facilities instead of foreign to minimize the issue. I'm never going to give a sort of a safe haven saying, don't worry about it in a foreign country if you didn't file a tax return, have business activity. There's lots of cases you see with some with the foreign government coming after people with taxable nexus issues, et cetera. So, and given the permanent nature of the blockchain, I would not. I wouldn't recommend it. It's just minimize the issue by just doing it domestically, limit your issues to US issues, and then you could potentially have a state issue where if you're mining in Kentucky or Texas or Alaska, what do they think? And maybe then I take that kind of risk because I'm a little more comfortable with that. But that's, again, for people to decide. You know, there's the OECD, which is an organization economically developed countries, has put out standards and studies around the approaches to global taxation of crypto. In some instances, they don't tax when the mining reward is granted. They wait for you to dispose of the coin. In other instances, they tax you, like the IRS's view. We'll see if that actually is going to be sustained. Some people think that you should tax mining like you do mineral mining, minerals, where if you dig and find gold, you're not taxed on finding gold, you're taxed on the sale of the gold. Some people have that view. I do think they have a technological issue to take on because, you know, although they have the same name, mining, the actual activity is fundamentally different. proof of work mining is a service, you know, to validate the protocol. And I think from a tax perspective, when you think what is the economic transaction, it probably is more akin to a service than anything else. And in my view, that services are generally sourced to where they're performed. You do have certain activities around the special rules around computer programs and computer activity, but I think you would be normally looking to where it's performed. And if, you know, the Congress could change that and saying they're now toying with some legislation around blockchain from a tax perspective in terms of defining digital assets, they haven't yet come across the sourcing rules. And the notion of source is fundamental in international tax. It effectively goes to jurisdiction to tax. That is what the primary question of the notion of source is. If something is U.S. source and you're a foreigner, all of a sudden now the U.S. is saying, boom, I have primary jurisdiction to source. And then you have to go in every source, and there's no monolithic source rule that that exists across the globe. If you're mining in Russia, you have to ask yourself, what does Russia think about source? And if Russia now says it's Russian source, now all of a sudden, Russia's going to have jurisdiction to tax. And hopefully the IRS agrees so that they'll give you a foreign tax credit if Russia does assert any taxing jurisdiction. So these are, you know, really important notions of source, timing, character, and all of these go to which ultimate tax liability is going to be.
I want to throw kind of a curveball at you both. Similar topic, but opportunity zones is something we're seeing in the chat, and also a question I've had after talking with some Wyomingites who have kind of like touted that as a reason for investing in crypto mining in the state, because up in Casper, they have an economic opportunity zone and they've been kind of trying to get people to go up there and mine. So interested to know the regulations around economic opportunity zone and if it really is what people market it to be. Shian, I'll start with you. Ken.
Yeah. Opportunity zones, I mean, definitely sounds good, but I'm not sure if that's really applicable in this conversation. But this is how opportunity zones work in general. So let's say you have some type of capital gains coming from, it could be crypto or stocks. What you can do is you can sell those, in the case of crypto, let's just sell them. And within a certain period of time, you reinvest those gains in a qualified opportunity zone fund. So this fund goes and, you know, build something in an economically, you know, bad area, which the IRS designates as an opportunity zone. And at certain intervals, meaning if you were to keep the funds in the QOF, qualified opportunity zone fund, for 5 years, 7 years, and 10 years, you get certain tax breaks. So in the case of mining, I think the only way maybe Roger can add, you can set up a mining operation in an opportunity zone, actually build one, in a warehouse or something like that. And that would allow you to get in some, you know, tax deferment and tax elimination if you were to keep that, you know, assets 10 years or longer, I believe. So I
know a lot about this topic because I'm actually an advisor to a qualified opportunity zone that is doing, proof of work mining. And I've gone very deep in this and engaged with the IRS on this issue. The answer is that, yeah, I agree with the framework that Shehan outlined. If you have any capital gain from a mutual fund distribution, from the sale of an NFT, sale of other crypto or stocks or bonds, you have to invest it within 180 days of realizing a capital gain. So if you're invested in this fund, there's three key benefits. The first is you don't pay current tax on that cap gain. The second is if you hold that the new investment for 5 years, so till 2026 now, that's the tax is deferred until then. If you sell your new investment, it's triggered, but basically it's deferred for 5 years. Thirdly, you have 10% forgiveness of the current tax bill of that cap gain. And then the new point is that if you sell your new investment, the new investment, after you hold that for 10 years, you pay zero tax on a new investment. So you get all those big benefits, and those are clear. So the opportunity zone fund, OZ, is a phrase. You have to ask, how do you qualify? I think if you dot the I's across the T's, mining operations can qualify at a high level of comfort. That's my personal view, and we've engaged outside counsel to confirm that. That's the second point. Thirdly, it's tricky because there are certain requirements for what a good OZ business, qualified opportunity zone business, is. And if you're holding Bitcoin that you mine in that fund, you run the risk of failing to satisfy the requirements because of how Bitcoin could be treated and the uncertainty around it. So you need to have guidance on there. I personally view it as unclear. I've discussed this with other counsel, and they also think it's unclear. And in this kind of thing where you're taking positions with deferred tax liability, you want to minimize risk. And if you can't get a should opinion on that issue, most serious investors and advisors won't do something like that. There's ways to minimize that structurally. I've just worked with people in designing that. So, but you've got to take mechanisms to minimize what kind of tokens you're putting on. And I think there's even a difference between tokens. You know, Bitcoin, I think, is different from a tax perspective than a utility token like Filecoin or Videocoin or something like that. And I think the tax treatment would differ, and how the opportunity zone rules would apply would be different for those kinds of assets compared to Bitcoin. And you've got to really go through that. And I think if you're going to, I'm happy to chat with anybody about that, but if you're engaging with somebody and getting advice on these rules, you got to ask yourself, what are you mining? How is the tax law going to treat that asset? I don't think crypto is a monolithic asset for tax purposes. You've got to ask yourself, the relevant crypto asset I have, is it, you know, does it do something, or could a tax law take a different approach? And other countries like the UK do differentiate between types of crypto assets rather than having one monolithic treatment. And I, by the way, I don't, I personally wouldn't wait for the IRS to give me that. I think right now you can take the view based on the function and utility of the crypto asset, what you think it is and how you think a substantive tax rule can apply. That kind of thing, the IRS wouldn't probably rule in advance. But I think that there are ways to minimize that risk and engage with the IRS or with your tax advisors to get comfortable with some of the things that I'm saying.
Yeah, for sure. It seems like there's a little bit of a common theme here, although some things are cut and dry. There's definitely some question marks, I guess, maybe asterisks next to a couple of these topics, which is, I guess, why we're super glad that both of you are on the show today. I should mention both of our guests are on Twitter. Hopefully we'll get Roger, you know, more active and maybe even shitposting a little bit some of these days on Twitter, but they both are there and definitely deserve a follow. Roger, I kind of want to jump back and hear both of your guys' opinions, jump back to something you mentioned a bit ago that we also had brought up in some questions from our customers. You mentioned like what Bitcoin proof of work mining actually is in terms of like a service or maybe an analog to mineral mining or metal mining. And I guess if we had to isolate one thing that was like the bane of most miners' existence, it's this idea of like double taxation, where you pay income, and then if you want to pay the income tax with the asset that you mine, then you're shouldered with capital gains taxes also to actually get the cash to pay the initial taxes, and then you're faced with sort of two burdens there. Kind of an open-ended question, but is there any hope for like reconciling that or making that whole process a little bit easier for miners? Or is that just kind of going to be the way it is for in perpetuity? Miners have to pay two taxes if you mine and sort of sell anything to pay those taxes. Or is there any hope for maybe that to be altered in the near-term future? Again, understanding that the IRS is still working through understanding and building the best framework they can for all these things. It still is, you know, kind of painful and annoying. Is there any hope to fix that? I guess I'll hand it back to you, Roger, and then she and I definitely want to know your opinions too.
2 points. First is if you mine Bitcoin and say you receive a full Bitcoin at $46,000 and you sell it now immediately, you'll only have one level of tax because you mine it for $46,000. Your $46,000 income inclusion is ordinary today, and then when you sell it, you have zero gain because your basis equals the amount you realize from selling it. So you only have one level of tax. So the IRS separates, and this is not the IRS, it's the way the tax law works. And the IRS writes tax law to a degree, but they're constrained by, you know, the broader penumbra of the law. And they're fundamentally different transactions. So whether you call mining or mineral mining, or you call it a service consensus mechanism, that's the economic activity that you're rewarded on. For the same reason that if I hire you to program for me and I pay you in Bitcoin, you have income in Bitcoin. And the fair value of your income, which is ordinary for services, your salary, is the value of the Bitcoin I pay you. Then later on, if you sell that Bitcoin after holding it a year, you're going to have gain. And there's no difference in that for people who get compensation in stock, compensation in a truck or gold painting, gold or painting or whatever. So there's no special rule around crypto that exists. And I think, you know, we don't do ourselves as a community a service by asking for this kind of special treatment. Could you say, oh, treat me like I'm mining minerals? That's a fair discussion because it's a pro-growth activity. It's Web 3.0, and we want to be the global leaders in this, and there's global competition. So we want to really foster this. And economic models for people who are in this show that it's far more profitable to mine and hold rather than just mine and sell. So if we believe that, then we need a congressional change, quite frankly, a statutory change. And I think it has to come from Congress in order to do that, rather than the IRS that has the authority granted to it only by Congress. So people IRS bash, but you have to fundamentally have to go back to our high school civics class. There's a fundamental difference between the power of the IRS and the power of Congress.
So sure. No, yeah, that makes sense. I guess if we're waiting on Congress for something, it might be, you know, quite a while till we get something there. But
you see the power of the community. I mean, the crypto was holding up the entire infrastructure bill. They're trying to get a report. So I think where any one senator has tremendous power, and Senator Portman was really focused on crypto, so it's important to Ohio. I think in that one Republican senator also a disproportionate amount of power because neither side can afford to lose anything. So anyone that says, give me this to get my vote. And it's important to Florida, it's important to Wyoming, it's important to Texas, Kentucky's putting mining incentives in, obviously Ohio. I mean, it is a thing where people really think about this Web 3.0 is far bigger than Bitcoin. Personally, I'm not a Bitcoin maximalist. I'm somebody who's focus on the blockchain technology and Web 3.0 applications. If you focus on that, I think there is a future and a way for Congress to solicit change if it wanted to, if it thought it was economically appropriate.
Sure. I appreciate that perspective greatly. Sheehan, I want to give the same question to you. Any thoughts on like quasi double taxation kind of, even though there it is structured differently, like it can be kind of annoying. Like any thoughts to add there?
Yeah, I think there's this, a misconception in the crypto community that the mining income is taxed twice. There's a difference between double taxation and you're going through two taxable events. So in the industry, like if I speak to Roger, like he would understand what double taxation means and also, you know, two levels of taxation. But let me kind of give an example to show you that mining is not subject to double taxation. It is subject to two levels of taxation. So say that, you know, you mine one Bitcoin worth $300. You report that as order income. And later in the year, you sell that, you know, coin, which you mined at $300 for $1,000, and you pay taxes on $700. So those are two taxable events. And that's not a situation where the dollar of income being taxed twice. And you might wonder, okay, is there such a thing called double taxation? Yes, it does exist in the corporate world. For example, if a corporation earns income, that's getting taxed at 21%. And when you get dividends, you're getting taxed on the same income, which the corporation paid taxes on again. So the point here is crypto mining is not being subject to double taxation. You see two levels of taxation. Most importantly, you know, just $1 of income is not taxed twice. It just taxed at two different time points.
That's a great summary. Appreciate that. Yeah, I think it's important for everyone in the mining industry to really kind of understand the differences there. I kind of want to turn over to a 101 question just for our audience. We solicited some questions in Discord earlier and got some really great questions. So one of those was kind of weighing the choice of creating an LLC for your mining operations or just mining by yourself and filing for income. Shane, I want to throw it back to you. When you're thinking about mining, or when you've talked with miners, or even if you've mined yourself, how would you go about structuring your portfolio, and how would you go about kind of creating the least amount of taxes for your mining operation?
Yeah. So first of all, LLC is a legal structure. It has nothing to do with your tax profile or anything like that. This LLC legal structure could be taxed as a partnership, corporation, and et cetera. So that's number one. The reason why you would create an LLC to add, you know, protection against, you know, claims and et cetera. I mean, I've seen, you know, people just mining as sole proprietors, meaning like they're just mining under their own name. In other cases, they set up an LLC in their state, and then the LLC registers with an account, and then the mining income would go into the LLC. Now, if you have an LLC and if you are the own member, we call it a single member LLC. And whether you have a single member LLC or whether you're mining under your personal name, have no big impact on your taxes, because you had to pick up the income. If you're mining as a trader business, either under LLC or under your personal name, you know, you get the expense deduction. The good thing about having an LLC is that you get that added, you know, legal protection. And Roger can speak more about this. He's an attorney.
Yeah, I would agree with the one caveat, Gian. I think it adds some coins on the scale of saying I'm not a hobbyist. You know, Sheehan and I agree that that's the debate. If I'm just mining and I've got a mining rig in my basement, and so the IRS can come in and say, nah, you're not a miner, you're a tax lawyer. But now all of a sudden I have a business entity. And by definition, if I set up an LLC and I put it, you know, bring in my wife, my friends, whatever, and it's a partnership, and that's all the thing does, it mines. Now, all of a sudden, I get, you know, Shiano talked about it, I agree, and now I can get deductions, I can take a 100% salary depreciation write-off, I can deduct my internet bill, my electric bill, and all these other great things. So now I, you know, I don't want to be taxed on gross income, which I am if I have a hobby. I can tax on net income, net of all those expenses. So I think it helps with those things. And Shiano turned it back to me with regard to the formalities. Yes, an LLC affords you limited liability, but it's not free. You've got to observe the governance of an LLC. You've got to pay the annual fees. You've got to do the annual filings. You've got to document your major actions. You've got to do those kinds of things. And then you get this. If I'm in a foreign country, I'm certainly going to use an LLC to separate. I don't want Roger Brown to have to pay taxes in a foreign country. I'd rather have my entity do it. So I think those are some of the key things that I'd be focusing on, just because I want to make money from my crypto activity. I don't want to deal with, you know, liability from falling down on these you know, not satisfying these certain things. I would also make one special thing. If I'm in a trader business, there's a special, what they call 199 Cap A deduction, which is a really great deduction brought in by, in 2017. And I've talked with a, you know, really competent lawyer, John Cunningham, in New Hampshire. I'm happy to share his info, where he believes that I agree with that. If you're a miner, that kind of activity can qualify for an additional 20% deduction, where it rises the level of a trader business. And that's the kind of thing where if you're an active miner, it could do. So these are the kind of things. And again, an LLC, treated as a flow-through entity, either partnership or flow-through, either one, single member entity, it'll help you get these additional benefits and be taxed on a net basis, not gross.
That's very interesting. I think, like, so sort of as a follow-on to that question, which sort of ties into basically what you both were just explaining, we had a question that asked, like, what are the reasons that someone would not want to like set up an LLC or an entity to mine through? And it seems like, obviously, correct me if I'm wrong and expand on it maybe a little bit, but like, just as a hobbyist, you're mining under your own name, and there are certain, you know, pros and cons to that maybe, but it's, if you set up an entity, you're sort of elevating it to a whole new level of operations. And there are additional pros and cons that come with that, but it's just, you know, you're leveling up one or two steps and taking on a whole new sort of load of responsibilities and concerns and all of that. Is that like a fair assessment, I guess? Like, why wouldn't someone want to set up an LLC, I guess?
I agree with that. Unless you're a true hobbyist and you're like, yeah, it's a thing I'm doing and I'll be taxed on gross. I don't know why anybody would want to be taxed on gross, but it is what it is. And I would also say, I don't see the IRS being result oriented here, trying to revenue maximize. I think they're pretty principled with regard to what is the tax that's owed. That's their job. That's the reason for the IRS to collect the tax that's owed, and they're not trying to take aggressive positions in maximizing what they should get. I would say that because that's been all of my interactions, A, when I worked there years ago, and B, my dealings with people who are under audit.
Gotcha. Sheehan, anything else to add? Like, why wouldn't someone necessarily want to set up an LLC and just, I guess, you'd sort of be relegated out of the zone of hobbyist mining at that point? Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. LLCs are kind of costly. I mean, you got to, you know, probably talk to an attorney, set up an operating agreement, et cetera. There's sort of administrative cost. So those are the other reasons.
I would tell you that you could use some of the LegalZoom, Rocket Lawyer, and things like that, and you could set it up for a couple hundred bucks. It's actually not that. It's not expensive.
So we know from just like basic practices, it's not just like setting up an LLC that you need to be like concerned about or choosing not to set up an LLC rather. Also, you need to think about your mining hardware itself and how to treat that. And often we've seen miners talk about how you can like depreciate it on some sort of schedule. And I think it'd just be really awesome to get some clarity on how these assets are kind of considered by tax code when you purchase them and then you put them in an LLC. What does that depreciation schedule mean in the first place? And then how can you kind of treat it going down the line? Specifically, as like some of our miners are on schedules, they want to add more miners to their fleets over the years and depreciate some as they go along and add more and through like the mining profits that they garner. Sheehan, can I throw that to you first?
Yeah. So in order for you to depreciate anything, first of all, you had to be involved in a trade-off business. So that's the number one criteria. The other question that I saw is that, okay, can I depreciate if I don't have an LLC? So that having an LLC or not is irrelevant for the depreciation question. What's relevant is what type of business you have. Is it a trade-off business or a hobbies? So if you're a trade-off business, obviously you can depreciate. There are multiple code section of the IRS code that kind of allows you to write off the cost of these machines. Section 179, bonus depreciation, and also the de minimis safe harbor rule, which allows you to kind of, expense anything below 2,500 if you don't have applicable financial statement, you know, obviously subject to so many other things. So essentially, if you have a trade-off business, you can write off these machines in the very first year using Section 179. Bonus depreciation or de minimis safe harbor. If not, for whatever the reason, maybe you want to distribute your expenses, you can depreciate over 5-year time period. So if you spend $1,000 for a mining machine, you can take $200 deduction from first year to the fifth year.
Gotcha. That makes sense. I want to jump really quick now. We're creeping up on our time, but we have a couple more audience questions to get through. Hopefully these two can be, you know, relatively simple yes, no answers. Two questions we had come up a lot was with regards to the buying of machines and hosting fees. Most miners, I would say, pay with dollars or their local sovereign currency. Lots of people like to pay with crypto. So the question is, are buying machines and paying hosting fees with crypto taxable events? Maybe not a yes or no question, but I guess we can start, Sheehan, first to you, and then Roger, if you have anything to add. Like when you're looking at that, are those taxable events?
Yeah, I'll be quick. So buying equipment and paying fees in cryptocurrencies is a taxable event because you're disposing of a property. But if you were to buy mining machines and pay fees in US dollars, that's not a taxable event. And you actually get a deduction for that.
Gotcha. Roger, anything to add there?
No, that's right.
Awesome. Next question. We had a bunch of questions come up with write-offs. machines aside, like miners, depending on how you structure it, you can look at multiple different types of fees that you're paying, hosting fees, pool fees, all of these sorts of things. Are any of those types of fees able to be, do they qualify as deductions for miners? Roger, I guess I'll hand this one to you first.
Yeah, they do. I would also say, you know, there's actually a technical difference between a deduction and an adjustment to gross income. So, you know, I could take in 10 of income and give you 2, so that might have a $2 deduction and an income inclusion of 8. Or the hosting fee, if they take it right off the top, so my entitlement is only 8. So I never have a deduction of 2. My income inclusion is 8. So one thing to think about is structuring it so that you have an adjustment to income, so that you don't have to deal with, do I get a deduction? If you have an economic activity, you don't file a tax return, and a foreigner, if a foreigner doesn't file a tax return in the US and they have a trade or business activity, they get 0 deductions. There's a special code section that says that. So they get taxed on gross. So you are generally better off to have an adjustment to gross income than a deduction. And all the things like pool fees, hosting fees, electric, all those things are deductible. And as I said, to the extent you can have an adjustment to gross income, the better off you generally are.
Awesome. That's super helpful. One other thing, I lied. I should have said 3 questions. A lot of our miners are thinking about, you know, selling their actual machines, not just the Bitcoin itself. So machines obviously appreciate and depreciate in value, depending on which direction the market and Bitcoin and everything else goes. Miners may want to offload a machine that they bought for $3,000 that's now worth, you know, $15,000 or something like that. Any like tips or common mistakes or like how exactly to report those sorts of gains when you resell the hardware that you've been mining with after a certain period of time? Sheehan, if you don't mind taking that one first, and then Roger also.
Yeah. When you later sell those machines, I mean, there could be a gain event. A gain could come from because the market has gone up in prices, and also from the depreciation recapture. So in simple terms, the government gave you a deduction, which is a depreciation. Okay, take this, first year right off. And when you later sell that machine, you had to pick up that income as we call it, you know, depreciation recapture. So what I'm trying to say here is that you got to calculate all the depreciation correctly. And the gain is pretty much, you know, your sales minus the adjusted basis, of your equipment. So, for those things, I would encourage you to use an accountant.
Roger, anything to add there in terms of selling machines?
Yeah, I would, if you're selling it abroad, I would think about to see if I could get what they call the FDII, foreign direct, and your corporation selling it. You want to think about whether you can get a special deduction and a favorable tax rate with you're selling it to a foreign buyer, a U.S. machine. It only applies from resale by a U.S. person overseas. Generally, you also want to just have, I would pass title overseas also. If I'm doing that, that gives you foreign source income. Foreign source income is generally always a good thing. It's never going to hurt you. And I think those are the base things.
Awesome. Talking about foreign source income. So El Salvador legalized or made Bitcoin legal tender the other day. And that has come up as a question in a lot of different cryptocurrency circles, wondering what the impact of that has been. And I've seen some very blunt explanations rather, saying like, this isn't going to change anything at all. But I am just curious. I want to ask the question, like, does El Salvador making Bitcoin legal tender change the dynamics for Bitcoin miners in the US? And maybe if not, if you are mining in El Salvador, would it change how your tax complications work out on the other side?
Yeah, I'll go. My view is that it doesn't change anything. Other tax lawyers that I've talked to have the same view. Although in the 2014 notice that the IRS put out describing current law, they said Bitcoin is not currency, this is not legal tender. That's all they focused on. However, there's other notions of, is it backed by a foreign sovereign? Is it issued by a foreign sovereign in addition to legal tender? I think you have to look at all 3 of those things to see if something is a currency. If it is a currency, now all of a sudden it becomes ordinary property in general, meaning whenever I buy or sell it, it's ordinary property. If I'm engaging in a personal transaction where if I want to buy a hamburger with currency, it's a personal transaction, I can exclude up to $200. I can't do that if it's not currency. You get all these different things. I don't think you get into those kind of rules as a result of this, simply because there is Bitcoin is legal tender in El Salvador. I think you're going to have a different question, however, when other currencies are digitized. Our banking regulator, for example, authorized banks to issue stablecoins, dollar-backed stablecoins. I think those would be treated as currency. If a foreign country does that, and I think there's a couple, like Bahamas, I think, does issue that, maybe some others has foreign stablecoins. I think those that effectively are representations of dollars, or and I think Paxos issued USDP, they renamed it the Pax dollar. I think those can be currencies or treated like it from a tax perspective. But I think you have to really go into what it is. And I think recently there were articles on USDC, what backs USDC, what backs USDT. I think now people said, nah, probably not a currency, because it really is backed by a lot of, yeah, there's currency behind it, but it's like, you know, more than a third debt instruments of sovereigns or what have you. I think you have to ask yourself, what is a stable coin before you get to the currency question? But all that is separate from your usual question of, is Bitcoin a currency? My view is no.
Gianna, I want to give you a second to respond to that, but I'm also curious if we can pivot to the infrastructure bill as we're closing out here in a few minutes. Is there any updates or information on that front that miners should be aware of? We know that there's already been some products and applications out there that have kind of taken a conservative view and decided to kind of back off releasing new products until that cryptocurrency bill is kind of figured out. So from your aspect, wondering, or from your angle, wondering what our miners should know about.
Yeah, just to give you a quick response to the El Salvador question, I agree with Roger. I don't think it will have an impact on the, you know, US taxes in the near future, the short answer. Infrastructure bill, the last time I checked, it's being, you know, further defined by the Treasury. I haven't heard anything after that. So unfortunately, I don't have any new updates.
I'd also ask that I don't think a miner would need to hold off on issuing new products. I wouldn't have thought a miner is a broker in the first instance. So it's additional clarification. There are other information reporting provisions that are not in the section that Congress is thinking of amending that are in other sections that need to be thought about. But that section, it has different statements in the colloquy on the Senate floor, just make clear it's not affecting miners. You need to think about other provisions that we can talk about on another call if you'd like. But I don't think it's something that miners need to think about. Need to refrain. I think they do need to think about if they are making certain payments. And I understand your business model is not this, what will exact. But if a miner is taking custody of the payments and making payments, you got to think what other information provisions could apply to me and think about whether I have to live with those.
Gotcha. That makes sense. All of this has been an incredible discussion. We're right about at time here. Roger and Sheehan, I won't lie. When we were sort of looking through the questions we were receiving, we had no idea whether we were going to be able to get to all of them in this conversation. And I can't thank you both enough for all the information, insights, opinions, and everything else that you've shared with all our miners through this conversation. Based on just the chat alone, I know they've enjoyed it. Will and I have also, I feel comfortable speaking for Will. Will and I have both also enjoyed it quite a lot. So quick reminder to the audience, both our guests are on Twitter. They're both, as you have seen, incredible minds to ask and contact about any other mining questions you may have. Roger Sheehan, again, thank you both so much. This has been an absolute pleasure. Have loved having you on. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap.